Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us this morning for our Venture Law Meetup webinar. This month, we continue to do this program remotely due to COVID-19, and we want to talk about a really timely topic. It's been in the news, but I think that now that we've all settled into working from home and a lot of us are considering how to move back into the office, one of the really big issues is there insurance coverage for any business losses? What other types of insurance areas should we be considering? And when we're doing our business planning, what should we be thinking about around the insurance coverage that the companies already have or will be getting in the future, because we're also coming up upon insurance renewal within the next month or so. So I just want to introduce that topic. And I have with me my colleague, who's an absolute expert in this area, Mary Jo Hudson, and also Mike Cummings, who is also in his own right expert in this, and he is the life science industry practice leader at Highland, which is an insurer. So I'll quickly introduce myself for those of you who may not know me. I am of counsel in the corporate group at Squire Patton Boggs in their Cleveland office. I focus my work primarily on the early to mid-stage businesses and, a mix between company side and investor side work for companies. I do a lot of business in the life science realm, so, thus I know Mike, who works also in the life science realm, and work with him nearly every day with mutual clients. So I'd like to ask Mary Jo to introduce herself as well.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Mary Jo Hudson. I'm based in our office in Columbus. I have practiced law for over 30 years, and I have spent time both in private sector, and I did two tours of duty at the Ohio Department of Insurance. So I've worked as an insurance regulator, the first time as a lawyer, worked in the receiver's office there, then back after private practice. My second stint, I served as the director of insurance and served on the cabinet of Governor Ted Strickland. I've practiced since I left office in 2011, only in the insurance area, and work on a lot of regulatory issues and also risk management issues. Pleased to be here today.
And I'm Mike Cummings. I run the life sciences industry practice for Highland. We are an insurance broker. Life sciences to us is anything that is regulated by the FDA except for food, tobacco, and cosmetics. In my role, and that would extend to my team, we are available to help those customers that I just described and within that FDA-regulated area with insurance and risk issues, and had the really the honor of doing it for about 26 years, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to have both you here and Mary Jo. I'm a little humbled to have this expertise in the room with me. So moving forward, just a quick commercial thank you to our co-sponsors. So we don't just put on this webinar series, and it's also an in-person series when we are all in the office by ourselves, but we have 14 co-sponsors that help push out the invites for the programming and also provide subject matter expertise for our various programs. I see some of them have called in today, so I want to, quick shout out and thank you for those of you who have called in, and for everybody else who has really been helpful with this program over the last couple of years that we've been running it. So diving into the topic today, insurance is always the hot ticket topic, sexy area, really. I say that with a question mark, but really, really is interesting, at least to us and hopefully to everybody on the call. We're going to cover a few different areas as we move through, and please feel free to send questions. You have to type them in rather than asking them in person. We'll try to cover them during the webinar. this is generally a very relaxed setting. And we like to answer the audience questions if we can. So the first area, obviously the hot topic area these days, business interruption insurance. It's all over the news, and we want to talk to you about, you know, what's in the news, what's going on, what the insurers can do, what the regulators are talking about, et cetera. Moving from there, where should we be looking for the future of risk and, you know, if insurance will be covering those risks in the future? And closing out with a very practical thing, a lot of companies are going up to insurance renewals right now, and also some insurance premiums are paid on a monthly basis and can be changed. So how can you reduce your premiums, and what actions can you take today to help your finances in the next year in that area? So, you know, I'll ask Mary Jo if she wants to start the discussion on business interruption from her viewpoint, more on the regulator and policy side of things.
Sure. Well, thank you, Leah. And so probably 90% of folks never know they really have business interruption coverage until for some reason there's a shutdown. It's a portion of your property coverage. So it's written generally so that there's a fire or a flood or something happens in your office that's covered under your policy, such as a fire at the building, and there's a shutdown while there's repairs being made, then there's some type of compensation for the loss of the access to that office, or possibly going to temporary quarters until you can get back in. The stay-at-home orders issued by almost every state across this nation have resulted in a new form of business interruption that we've not seen in this country really for 100 years. And made allegations, pressed publicly, both in the press, in the courts, and in the legislatures, both state and in Congress, to force the business interruption to be interpreted as covering this type of pandemic. Mike, this is not just a planning issue. I mean, there is special pandemic coverage, but if you could talk a little bit about what you're seeing in this area, and sort of what expectations are of policyholders as the shutdowns began.
Yeah, absolutely. Great explanation, Mary Jo. Most of my customers, when they're calling me, the first question is, okay, am I covered for this? And in the discussions, it's typically you're not, because generally business interruption coverage triggers when property is actually damaged. It suffers some type of a physical damage, as you explained, Mary Jo. So in that particular case, I always tell people you do have business interruption. As long as the damage occurs by a covered cause of loss, which is a fire, which is a tornado, a theft, an explosion, those kinds of things, business interruption triggers immediately. So in this particular case, because according to the policy terms, and as all of us hopefully have found out or certainly will find out, the policy did not trigger because there is no damage to the property. There has been, you are correct, Mary Jo, pandemic insurance available, but certainly and historically, it's not been something that's been on the top of a lot of entrepreneurs' list of things to, of risks to assess. So therefore, it's really not been something that has been at the top of mind. Certainly, it will be today, and we can get into some of that as we move along. Do you want to talk about significant events first, Mary Jo, and then I can follow on?
Sure, that would be great. So we've seen across the nation, I think starting with what many refer to are the celebrity chefs, starting at the French Laundry out in wine country in California, and continuing really across the country. But there have been a number of lawsuits, both individual and class action lawsuits filed against insurers, pressing that the business interruption coverage in the insurance policies cover the pandemic loss. Despite the fact that there's very good evidence that about 99% of those policies clearly do not and clearly exclude a pandemic or bacterial event, if you will. But the lawsuits are out there, and there's a lot of publicity around them, including, you know, going clear up to the press conferences involving the president. So likewise, there have also been there's also been legislation filed in various states, I think maybe 7 to 9 states, where the legislation is, this is very unique, suggests that the law in that state should be changed to force the insurance companies to pay, despite the terms of the contract, forced to pay, and but for certain businesses up to a certain size, usually 100 or 150 employees. So really forcing kind of a private form of compensation, again, despite the terms of the contract. Similar legislation has also been filed in Congress and the House. A group of senators has come out and said we absolutely oppose that. So it's a lot of grandstanding. But I think the most productive discussion has been at the national level. Currently, there's a discussion about enacting in one of the next stimulus packages a fund similar to what was developed after the 9/11 attacks. There was a fund for businesses and individuals who were affected by those attacks and had, you know, did not have a lot of insurance policies at that time and still did not have anything for a terrorist act. They excluded a terrorist act. So there were damages of all sorts that were not covered. The 9/11 fund took care of that. So there's work being done now to have sort of a business interruption fund that would cover what's not covered under insurance. Likewise, there's also this discussion because I think going forward, just like we saw after the 9/11 attacks in certain metropolitan areas, where before, nobody really thought about having terrorist coverage or that was a little more remote, then it became very real. And so suddenly there were certain areas like Midtown Manhattan where, you couldn't buy insurance with property coverage that didn't completely exclude any kind of terrorist act.
Right.
And so Congress adopted a fund to back up the insurance companies so they would write that coverage. And so that doesn't exist right now for a pandemic. So, Mike, I think you want to talk about what the value of both the fund to pay now and the fund to back up coverage later, what that would mean for folks on the line and for entrepreneurs as we move ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think this is going to surprise anyone. I've never given advice to my clients that they should be suing their insurance company to cover something that doesn't appear to be in the contract. That doesn't seem to be a strategy that is logical because I do believe that there is going to be something that will be implemented legislatively. So taking the forceful hand to force your insurance carrier to pay something just doesn't seem to be, in my view, the right strategy. However, you are correct. I mean, there are multiple ideas that are going around. One of the things that we will probably wind up doing, Leah, is even giving people some links to either insurance websites or other websites such as Squires, such as Highline. We have our own COVID-19 website where you can get more information. One of the sites that is actually very helpful if you're interested in finding out where the insurance industry stands, what it is that they're trying to do, what is on the legislative horizon, you can go to CIAB.com, the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers. And they actually talk about the issue that you just described, Mary Jo, which is the the Business and Employee Continuity and Recovery Fund. And that just seems to be more than likely one of the areas that we're going to see where employers, entrepreneurs that are on the phone, would have a remedy to reimburse them for or to pay for keeping employees, payroll assistance, business assistance, keeping everyone solvent in this time period until we can get back up and running. So doesn't relieve the insurance carriers of their obligation to help in other ways, and we can get into that a little bit later, but my gut tells me that legislatively, the legislature is going to be more than likely the best route in order to get some kind of form of recovery. Insurance companies are going to go insolvent if you force them to pay for things that they never accounted for.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I think that's a great point, just to give folks a perspective, and we won't belabor this. I work with insurance companies, and this isn't about just protecting what I do. But right now, because the insurance companies price and what those risks are expected under the terms of their contracts, right now if you took the funds that all the insurance companies have in reserve, they probably would pay for about a week of business interruption for all their policies.
Exactly.
And 100%. But then there would be nothing left. Yeah, there'd be nothing left to pay anything else. And I think, you know, in this recovery, the two things to think about, one is certainly paying claims that are legitimate, but the second is having a safe and sound insurance market going forward, because you can't do work, you know, when you have to respond to a vendor, when you go in to work at another, you know, for a contract partner to own property, to do just about any business, you have to have insurance. And so what we need to do is make sure this is done in a balanced way. So I don't want to belabor this too much, but I do think the key thing is right now, if you're thinking, wow, do I need to check on a business interruption claim, call your broker, talk it through with your broker, talk to counsel. I mean, again, I think Mike is right. Don't waste a lot of legal fees on this. Again, about 99% of your policies are not covering business interruption. But, be satisfied that your policy is part of the 99 or not part of the 1%. And if part of the 1%, that it really would, what your claim would be covered. But at this point in time, it's an uphill battle no matter what. So because there are a number of other factors, because this virus isn't causing the traditional definition of property damage. And we could talk
absolutely
about this just itself for a whole hour. So, and I know we've
we
got
could,
a lot of territory. So,
yeah.
Maybe we can move
on to the next topic and let folks know if they do have questions, we're happy to help out later.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And thank you, Mary Jo and Mike. And I agree, that's the big elephant in the room topic. But that being said, is once you get past that litmus test of you do or you do not have business interruption coverage that could cover the business interruption, we step now into what are the other risks? What are the other policies that I have? Where should I be focusing once I get, past the business interruption question? And, I'd like to ask Mike, what have you been seeing? What have you been thinking about planning for your clients to call you in that area?
Absolutely. So there are several different kinds of policies that many of you purchase that are potentially available in the future to cover consequences of COVID-19. Let's just go through a couple of them. There's the possibility that in the future there may be workers' compensation claims. This is going to be a little bit of a stretch in my view, because for a workers' compensation policy to quote-unquote trigger, the injury had to have occurred while you were working. And I'm not really sure how much proof we can come up with to say that someone contracted COVID-19 and it affected them as a worker. That's going to be a little bit of a stretch. So it's going to be kind of tough to prove. you do have employee benefits available. Most of you have it available. I know I have it available. There could very well be in claims being made against your, maybe that's not the right word, claims for some kind of health condition that is a result of COVID-19. So the employee benefits and the health insurance is actually part of the employee benefits. There are multiple policies. There's disability policies, life policies. So there are many that could fall in. Obviously, unemployment claims. I just read where certainly they've been at an all-time record. That's not going to surprise anyone. Cyber is a big deal. And for many of you, you're probably suffering from cyber fatigue. Cyber. We keep hearing all these words. I want everybody to pull out their pen. Let me give you the Cliff Notes version of what cyber is. There are three buckets, okay? There's first-party damage, which is breach response, extortion, those kinds of things. Then there's the third-party bucket, where you have network and security liability. Someone has hacked you, they've grabbed information that is valuable to them, and they've sold it on the black market, or they have used it in some type of nefarious way. So the third-party coverage will cover regulatory fines and penalties. I think one of the things we've got to be very careful of is that every state has their own breach notice laws. So you may, in fact, have network and security liability, but there are certainly some conditions you need to be aware of it. So first-party breach, physical damage, first-party is not a liability. The second bucket, third-party, it is a liability. Someone is bringing an action against you saying you did not secure your network. The third bucket is e-crime, and this is a big one. This is something that I think people need to be very aware of. This is social engineering fraud, telecommunications fraud, and a big one for startups is funds transfer fraud. I've had several customers that had been duped by individuals, bad actors, who have presented themselves as a potential customer, and they want to buy widgets, and you send them the widgets, and they give you a credit card number, and it turns out that it's a fraudulent credit card. So those are the three buckets, and those are some claims that could, or types of issues that you could be faced with, and that's some of the things that cyber covers. We have directors and officers suits, I believe. Well, I know they've already been filed, certainly against public companies. The allegation is that a director or officer did not prevent COVID-19. They didn't anticipate it. The stock has dropped, and therefore I, as an investor, have suffered. So actions and decisions made by directors and officers are going to be getting a lot of attention. Employment practices is a big deal where, in fact, you have, there have already been lawsuits against employers, even though we are in an at-will statement here in the state of Ohio, of wrongful termination, employers laying people off. So the allegations of employment practices could be made against you. And then fiduciary liability. Almost all of you on the phone, many of you as entrepreneurs and those in the fiduciary food chain do have exposure to fiduciary liability. So these are additional kinds of actions that you might be subject to in the future, and those are some of the policies that could in fact trigger.
Mike, thank you, Mike. Mary Jo.
Go ahead, Mary Jo. Yeah. Sorry.
I was going to say, it's a fantastic overview, and I think so business interruption is getting a lot of the air in the room, if you will, right now, but these are all areas of coverage that could be implicated and are being implicated right now. It's really from the plaintiff's bar side, kind of a feeding frenzy going on out there. All
right.
Kinds of lawsuits because folks are looking for money. And we get it. I get it. And it's just part of life and business these days. But these are some of the top areas. And so for any business of any size, being cognizant of the additional risks in these areas right now and working with your teams to make sure that your continuity plans, your back-to-work plans, and your documentation, et cetera, remain solid and thoughtful and focus on best practices to limit. It doesn't mean you're not going to get a claim of some sort, but limit the risk that you're going to have a big loss as a result of it. I do want to
acknowledge. Can I address?
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, please. No, we had a question on BI, but why don't you go ahead, and then we'll go back to that question.
That's so great, Mary Jo. You and I are thinking the same thing. I wanted to address a question that actually came up. Can I do it quickly, Leah?
Absolutely.
You know,
please do.
So the essence of the question that I'm seeing here is, look, if it's not covered, well, then, you know, what do we do about this? How are we going to be supportive? How are we going to get the information to people? You know, if they're getting this bad news that they don't have BI coverage, well, then what? What I'm advising my clients at this particular time is until we get to that position where the government or the legislature has come up with some type of a remedy, in the meantime, what I'm advising my clients is there, don't think of this as an insurance issue. There are other ways for you to get reimbursed or assistance from multiple places in order to quote unquote recover or to pay for the expenses that are ongoing, to keep employees employed, to keep your doors open, those kinds of things. So what I'm asking people to do is temporarily put your focus, take your focus away necessarily from the insurance policy and don't be upset about that. Focus specifically on where the other remedies are in the meantime. I mean, my goodness, the state of Ohio has significant resources. The state of Ohio, the government. I think obviously applying for small business loans, the PPP. Making sure you check in with your insurance company about, you know, can you waive premium payments, those kinds of things. So in the end, we're still getting some kind of reimbursement for the dollars that we desperately need. It's just not going to initially right now come from an insurance policy. So that's how I would react to that.
Well, and Mike, if I can add, it's Mary Jo, I would add a couple things for trade associations, others where you have a lot of folks at one time that are hurting. I certainly acknowledge that and help out with all the programs Mike said. You know, I think the other thing is to say, you know, to go the route of forcing where it doesn't exist, and I think that's horrific public policy, and where does it stop? But the second is that in the insurance context, I always said when I was at the insurance department, it's kind of like whack-a-mole. So if you force something in one place, it pops up somewhere else. It means it would raise prices for everyone going forward, because someone has to pay for it. The second is that the federal legislation that I referenced earlier, more and more trade groups are getting behind that legislation, both the 9/11 fund type legislation and what's called PREA, the pandemic reinsurance fund, which would be for future, to help with future coverage. Get behind both of those efforts. There's broad business support for those in growing. And so I think that's something then that your members, for a group of businesses, members can get behind and do something in a positive way. And help them understand, you know, that this isn't just about their current risk. This is also about planning for the future we are going to need this coverage going forward because now this is a risk that folks are anticipating. And so we
great,
need
great
both
point.
Of
are,
the current
are,
bond and next.
Agreed. There's several advocacy groups that we know of that are behind the federal legislation. So working in concert with other advocacy groups is absolutely critical. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yes. Thanks for that little break there.
Yeah, thank you both for your, you know, expertise in that area. So I want to shift from advocacy to the reality that in many states, including Ohio, but across the country, today or a few days ago became the day when everybody is going back to work or can go back to work, that are not necessarily essential businesses. And so I want to look at what does that mean for the future of risk for the companies that are now shifting employees back into the offices?
You want to start, Mary Jo, or I can? It's up to you.
You know, I'll tell you, Mike, I think at this point, this brings, you know, the slow reopening is going to go on for a while. I mean, we all know this, and especially for many in this audience. But it's going to pose a lot of risks that vary from when you had to shut your doors in the first place just 6 weeks ago. There's a lot to think about and plan, not only logistically to follow the state order, but also to minimize your risk of harm to yourself, to your employees, to your customers, and just to be able to keep your business rolling. So one of the things I see in this kind of situation, I really always suggest to businesses that I speak to, talk to your insurance broker. Brokers have a lot of resources and advice to help, but also they can help you understand your existing coverage and what else might be out there. So, Mike, that's where I'll introduce it, but I want to turn it to you. There are a number of future risks, I think, now that for a while more people are going to be working from home. This could be, you know, we saw in Columbus this week Nationwide announced they have people working from home, and then they're closing offices so people can work from home permanently. So this is going to be not just a temporary, but this could be a new way of working. So talk a little bit. Would you agree that brokers do have a lot of that info, and you're a good resource to help with thinking through some of these concerns?
Yeah, I would like to think that we're a pretty good resource. Hylent, along with several other brokers, have websites set up that talk about business continuity plans. What does it look like as you bring people back? I think one of the things to be very careful of as you're looking to bring people back, it's not just the governor. It's not just your company that is defining what that looks like. But then we also have the buildings in which we work. Many of us are lessees, and so the building itself may have specific risks. So I think it's, you know, for us, what we like to suggest is have a business continuity plan coordinator. Identify a person that has the responsibility of understanding what the risk is as we come back to work, what the risk is as it exists for employees working out of their homes. Those can be two different things. The cyber exposure, as we have on the screen, is different in the office. It could be have a higher a risk for employees as their home. Being very careful about the important information that you are protecting. And I did see, what was it yesterday, I think Zoom had some unfortunate breaches where I believe some of that information wound up on the dark web. I can't tell you I'm a dark web expert, but certainly being very careful about not only the venue that you use in your video conferencing or your calls, but make sure that if there is sensitive information, if there's something that is sensitive or something that you don't want nefarious individuals to know about, then just be smart about it. Make sure that you've got protocols in place. Make sure that you are being very careful about privacy and protecting that information. And then, you know, it's at the bottom of the screen here. We've got, I guarantee you, a lot of the folks in our business, especially, we have insurance carriers visiting us all the time. As a broker, we have other independent folks coming in and talking to us. You know, there have to be rules and regulations set up. This isn't a police state. I think it's just everyone needs to just be very diligent and very careful. And in my view, that's why I think to have a coordinator, someone to accumulate all the information, because it's vast amounts of information, seems to make sense.
And then we also, Mike, I think, you know, going forward, that's great advice. But I think talking to your broker is important. We've outlined a couple areas of risk. Maybe we can talk through a few of those that we think are sort of the top areas. Mike already touched on cyber, the Zoom issue. But as more and more people work remote, privacy and security of that data is going to be pretty important. But we're also going to be in a setting, you know, where with contact tracing and you know, having, I've just been reading about the Apple Google app that, you know, it literally will sense who you're around. We may not even know that person. And then we'll get an alert that says you were near someone that has COVID-19. You know, this is going to change, I think, not only people's expectations of privacy, but probably concerns about privacy. So, you know, if they happen to have encountered each other in your workplace, what does that do for you? I mean, this is completely uncharted territory. Those are risk issues where we have to really think through and think, what's covered on our insurance? How are we preparing for that? How are we warning folks? Do you make accommodations for folks to social distance? And they don't heed the warning. That's, when are you responsible? When are they responsible?
Interject here with something else where, you know, private companies and their service providers are thinking about cyber, but the government is too. So one of the most unknown things in the CARES Act is a pot of grant money for small businesses to receive free advice on mitigating cyber risk associated with teleworking and remote customer service. There's a way to access grant funds to help make a business, more prepared for this. So if anybody has questions about that, reach out. We have a team working on that. But it's something that is not just our problem. The government's foreseeing it, and they're, you know, providing an opportunity to help companies prepare and helping to pay for that preparation.
Absolutely.
That's great info. Great info.
And it still gets back to the risk assessment piece. You know, I talked about the three buckets of cyber. Well, do all of those really matter to you? I think having the discussion with your advisors about what is it that applies to us, you know, let's forget about the insurance language of quote-unquote cyber. Let's talk about, okay, what should we be concerned about? What are the exposures that we need to be focused on? And what are our options? What should we be doing about it? And as you said, there are multiple resources for people, and makes a great, great point.
Mm-hmm. It's mitigating your risk on one side, making sure you do have coverage on the other side. There's a lot to think about in new risks. I think if we maybe move to go ahead.
I was just going to move to the other side because I think making sure you have coverage, but so as I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, I think what's not on the horizon possibly for some companies is that insurance policies typically renew in the summer. So we're a month or two out from most of the renewal dates. And what are we looking at those to happen with those insurance policies now that the insurance providers have in direct and immediate hindsight this pandemic?
Sure. Do you want me to jump in? Sure. I'd be happy to. Just because you see things on the screen, it doesn't mean you don't have a strategy to approach these issues. But let's be very careful. Don't let anything surprise you. You will, in fact, see higher premiums. Now, higher premiums can be defined, and we've got to be very careful in the definition. That doesn't mean that your premiums are going to quadruple. Mary Jo, I still believe that there are laws in place that restrict the insurance carriers from increasing premiums by a certain percentage. There have to be notice requirements, and there's some laws that are protecting policyholders as far as higher premiums are concerned. But let's be careful. The insurance market has already begun to harden. What that means is that premiums have started to rise. I think you should be very careful about restrictive terms or clarifications regarding not only pandemics, but just about every term that you may see that could be a new endorsement on the policy. This is where your broker should, it does have the responsibility to explain to you what terms and conditions have changed in some of the renewals. Again, on the good side, I mentioned it earlier, the insurance carriers have stepped up. They've offered a waiver of cancellation for non-payment of premium in the short term. They're reducing some of the premiums, especially for our personal auto coverage and some of those policies. I will tell you that as far as specific kinds of insurance that I would want to perhaps focus on, the directors and officers market is really in an uproar right now. If you are a new policyholder, expect it to be a much more challenging process to secure coverage. The number of markets that are looking at, especially life sciences startups, is shrinking. And even within that realm, those individual companies are offering, perhaps they are not offering the higher limits that they were in the past. Your retentions, your deductibles might be going up. So that's something that I would absolutely focus on. And that would include also the employment practices. Cyber, I think we've talked about. On one hand, once you've got a strategy, once you put the coverage in place that you believe is appropriate to protect you, just be aware that, again, these are contracts. You've got to look closely at what is covered and what some of the limitations are. Professional liability, errors and omissions, is something that we should also be aware of. Many times this is combined with product liability. For those of you on the phone that are FDA-regulated companies, product liability is the allegation of bodily injury or property damage. Errors and omissions, professional liability is financial damages that someone has alleged they suffered through the use of your product or service. There's the very real possibility that workers' compensation premiums are going to go up, and we'll talk about that in a second. I don't think there's any question that property insurance, especially for higher hazard classes, I mean, if you're a foundry, I don't think there's any foundries on the phone, but those people are really having to pay much higher premiums. But don't be surprised if you do see property premiums go up. And then, you know, let's be aware, folks. We mentioned it earlier. There isn't that regulatory risk coming up. If you've gotten a PPP loan, again, just be aware that there are severe penalties for false statements or some type of allegation that there were false statements in those applications. So it could very well be that there's regulatory risk that could raise its ugly head in the future. So those are just a couple of policies that you should probably be paying some pretty close attention to. Honestly, the market is going to bear certain things. I don't think you're going to see premiums go up, you know, double, but you will, in fact, see some increase in premiums. You're going to see a restriction of terms, but it's on a relative basis. I think understanding what those terms mean, understanding how it affects you, being aware ahead of time, and anticipate how these policies will either respond or don't respond is, in my view, a very important issue.
Yeah, and thanks very much, Mike. And I'm going to interject now because as you were talking, I was thinking of the practicality of what that means for me as a transactional attorney and what it means for the clients that are know, dealing with all the different business issues, and Mike saying you, at this point, you become an expert in your insurance policies as well. And I think that it can become overwhelming. But I want to, like, boil this down to the practical points, which is I think that insurance is changing, and this is a board issue. Your insurance broker can help you with what the premiums are going to look like next year and what your coverage is going to look like. And you should be talking to your board about how that is protecting your company so that they are knowledgeable about it. And then the second one, and this is the everyday takeaway, is that when entering into a new contract, there's usually, but not always, a section of the contract that says insurance, and it lists out the kinds of insurance that you should have. Pick that up, copy and paste it, send the whole contract, whatever, to your insurance broker, and make sure you have what the contract is asking for, because most likely businesses have not yet updated their template for the reality of where the insurance market is moving.
Agreed.
And then, for any contracts that you already signed that have insurance requirements in it, do a quick, you know, visual look through your big contracts, the ones that are important to your business, see what the requirements are, and take a fresh look at what those insurance requirements are to understand if you can still meet them, to understand if you need to open the conversation in this area with the vendors or other contracting parties that are really important to your business, and be proactive about it.
Assume contracts are going to change, and assume that the review is necessary. I couldn't agree more.
Absolutely, and it's Mary Jo, and I would just add, I think that very, very sound advice, but in addition, it may be to the point for certain coverage where your broker is going to talk to you about what's called surplus lines coverage. It isn't bad. It's just from a market that it means it doesn't have guarantee fund coverage. It comes with some additional risk to you as the insured. And you also, there also may be circumstances where you can't get coverage. So then you're looking to self-insure or possibly set up work through a captive insurance program. Your broker can help you with that. That's for a little larger platforms and risks. But there could be tax planning and other planning that it might make sense now to use a captive where it didn't before as the market hardens. So that's an issue you can discuss with your broker. If they talk about using the surplus lines carrier, understand that comes with some additional risk. It's not bad. It just comes with some additional risks, and understand what those risks are.
You know, thank you, Mary Jo and Mike, for your, you know, expertise and your comments on that. And I think as we're thinking about risk, the other practical thing that I want to boil down is that the business has just been harmed. And maybe not 100% of businesses have been harmed that are making less money and having to make their money stretch, but I think majority, and probably a lot more than majority have been. So they're going to be you need to be looking at how you make your dollars stretch. And, you know, in that context, we want to talk about, we expect premiums to go up, but what can you be doing now to minimize that increase in your premiums, or maybe have certain of your premiums go down, even if only for a small amount of time. So I guess, Mike, do you have practical takeaways to reduce the financial impact that companies are going to be looking at in this area?
Yeah, absolutely. Do not be shy. You need to, if your broker hasn't reached out to you already, you need to reach out to them and make absolutely certain that the forecasts you had in your original applications when the policy first renewed, they're accurate. If they are reduced, you have every right to go back to the insurance carrier to say, look, my sales are not going to reach what I thought they would. And in that particular case, let's, you know, do we have a remedy to not only reduce the forecast, but then obviously reduce the premium? I think that those are very logical choices that need to be discussed with the broker and the insurance carrier. The broker is your advocate there. You know, the other thing we can do is look at our workers' compensation codes. If your you know, the way workers' comp works, and again, in the state of Ohio, it's of course the BWC that manages this, but it's typically the same for any state. The way the premium is calculated is you have a class code that identifies basically the type of job that the person is performing, and you multiply it times a rate, and you get the premium. So in that particular case, if the class code was a manufacturing exposure, but now the class code has changed, I'm going to simplify, to a working out of the house exposure, well, that could very well mean that you need to change your class codes on your workers' compensation policy to reflect the reduced exposure, and therefore the rate is different, and logically the premium is going to go down. I never hesitate include the actual underwriter in these discussions. These underwriters with insurance carriers want to meet you. They want to know who you are. They want to know, they want you to be their partner long term. And so having those discussions with the actual insurance underwriter is really, really important. Making sure that you're developing a great relationship with them. They know exactly where you stand. And I think together, the broker, the underwriter, and the insured can come up with some great suggestions in order to reduce the premium obligations.
Well, Mike, it's Mary Jo and team. I would completely agree. And I think this is, if there's any time to talk to your broker, certainly it's right now. And also I think, from what Leah said earlier in terms of looking at your contracts, and making sure that you're showing your broker exactly what vendors are requiring. A lot of that is going to change in the future. So, this is one area as businesses begin to reopen or start to go to the next phase of what is going to be a long transition for all of us. You have to know that this is a dynamic atmosphere and you have to work with it, assuming that nothing is going to be the same going forward.
Couldn't agree more. Don't be shy.
Yeah, thank you both for your comments. And we're right now at the end of the presentation, but we have a couple minutes, and I really would like your comments and your thoughts, you know, based on your expertise on what do you think that clients or companies should be doing next week versus next month as we move through, working through the coming back to work with the COVID-19, and where should people be focusing their energy?
Go ahead, Mary Jo.
No, thanks, Mike. I think we've a lot of the things we've talked about. Certainly, they've got to get up and running, and the safety of their colleagues and customers has got to be first and foremost. Working on those reopening plans, those new back to work plans. I think many folks have stayed active despite maybe having their doors closed or having their doors closed, but they're working. But know that there are insurance risks associated with all of those functions, and if you have it in this flurry of kind of crisis work, probably looking at your insurance policy wasn't the top priority. Now's the time to do that. Now's the time to set a call with your broker just to go over some of those things. What have you changed? And then how does that align with your coverage?
Look for facts. All of us are in information overload right now, let's be honest. And, I would be very cautious when it comes to depending on just your 6 o'clock news for your information. That does not seem to be good advice. I think you've got exceptional resources that are available from your advisors, your professionals. There are multiple access points to information, but stick to the facts. be very pragmatic, be very deliberate in not only thinking, I think you've given great advice, Mary Jo, what does this look like in the next 30 days? What does it look like in 90 days? And what are the long-term possibilities? Let's map those things out. Let's do a virtual whiteboard discussion and really get in that strategic discussion of where we think risk is going to exist, where will it change, who are the parties that we should be engaging to give us the sound factual information about what we should do about it. That just seems to be some of the advice that I would give.
Yeah, terrific. And Mike, I think too, you know, assume you're probably going to see, just like in a lot of other areas, some higher costs, and be prepared to ask questions, and also be mindful that there may be alternatives to what you've been, the standard type of policy and coverage you've been getting. And so ask ahead of time. Think about it ahead of time. Work with your broker. You know, when I was at the insurance department, we used to say, you know, for folks that would get like the minimum coverage, you get what you pay for. And mm-hmm. So you want to not just focus on premium, but you want to focus on the coverage. What's it going to cover? What risk is it going to help you manage? If we've learned nothing else in the last 6 to 8 weeks, it's that the unexpected can have dire consequences for many. And so don't just look at the premium, look at the coverage and figure out if that coverage isn't sufficient, if you don't, then what do you do to fill that gap? And work with your broker, work with your professionals and your counsel to fill that gap. But don't just focus on what am I going to be paying this month, and then because I have other bills to pay. I know that's a huge, huge issue, but be strategic about it and not just bottom line.
Absolutely.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'll give you my couple of takeaways. You know, one, I had mentioned, look at your contracts. Who is important to your business? What does that contract say? You know, look at it, but also use it as an opportunity to have a proactive discussion with that person or that entity that is important to your business. Connect with them. I mean, that's been the COVID-19, you know, mantra of working from home is connect, connect, connect. But this is a good reason to be proactively talking to someone who is important to your business and your continuity going forward. And it's a good conversation to bring up where you can be an expert. So I, you know, absolutely suggest to do that as early as you can in the process and talk to your board. Or if you're a board member, bring it up at your next board meeting. This should be this level of risk, the difference in finances. Everything should be well known at the top level of the organization. And there shouldn't be questions about this that are unanswered. So that's, you know, my high-level suggestions in the area as far as the practical takeaways. It, you know, we have 2 minutes left, so I want to, you know, say a quick and, you know, very sincere thanks to Mary Jo and Mike for their expertise that they've brought to us and shared with us. You know, if you have further questions, feel free to reach out. All of our contact information is on the slides. This is a big issue that not very many people are experts in. And so please utilize the experts that you have in your network. Reach out to us if you have other questions. We're happy to answer your questions. And then moving forward, next month, we're going to be virtual again. And I want to get to the right slide, actually, but sorry about that. Next month is going to be considerations for getting back to the office. And I know I said that today is a day that many people are allowed to go back to the office, but we see it in our business and I'm sure that many others do. Today's, you know, not 100% of workers walking back in, and maybe not even one worker walking back in. It's going to be a slow transition. And so we want to talk about the considerations for getting back to the office from an employment law and employment benefits perspective next month. And then we'll be sharing the slide deck afterward. We have a slide in there. Please open it up. Please, you know, peruse during your morning coffee, et cetera, through our resources. Squire has a resource hub. Highland has a resource hub. Squire also has a contingency planning tool that you can fill out, and you'll get a report back about how well your business is doing in planning on this pandemic. So please use the resources, and let us know if you have questions about them. We talked about many different things in those resource centers than what we could cover today, and help answer all of the questions that our mutual clients may have about what's going on and how we can help. So I just want to thank you very much for your time, for staying on the webinar, and thank Mary Jo and Mike again. It was such a pleasure to be working with you and putting on this webinar.
Our pleasure.
Yes, very much. Thank you so much for bringing us together.
Absolutely. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.